and there's going to be layoffs and short work weeks. And the steel industry is caught up now to the lag because of the strike, and they're cutting back. And the economists tell us 1961 we're going to have another recession. In fact, they tell us we're going to have three of them during the 10 years of the 1960s. Why? Why do we have to have recessions? The good Lord did not ordain it thus. We have them because we have not learned as a free people to achieve a dynamic balance between productive power and purchasing power in creating wealth and sharing that wealth in terms of our peacetime needs. And let me just say this, that the Negro people have a bigger stake in the fight for full employment than does any other group, because they get hired last and they get dumped on the street first. And when you look at the figures, in 1954, during the first Eisenhower recession, there was 4.5% unemployment among the white portion of our labor force. But there was 9% unemployment among the Negroes. In 1958, there was 6% unemployment among the whites, and there was 12.75, 12.75%, more than double among the Negroes. In the last 6 years of the Truman administration, because we had 4.7% economic growth and relatively high levels of employment, the income of whites increased 30%, or 5% per year in those 6 years of the last years of the Truman administration. The income of the Negro population increased 46% because they were getting in to better paying jobs because of full employment. But what happened during the last 6 years of the Eisenhower administration, when we had 2.3% growth, where we had unemployment, the income of whites went up 20%, and the income of Negroes went up 10%, because they were being pushed out of the labor force by unemployment. Now, these are the brutal economic facts of life. And what we need to do is to go to work in America. We live in a country in which the lowest paid worker has a vote, just as does a member of the DuPont clan. When you walk into the polling place, you cast a vote with equal force, as does the wealthiest millionaire living in a Park Avenue penthouse. But the tragedy is that millions and millions and millions of American working people don't exercise that power. And we've got to arouse America. We've got to raise the level of political consciousness and get people to register. We've got to talk the issues so they understand where people stand in terms of the issues as it affects their well-being. And then we've got to raise some money. In 1956, 12 wealthy families, including the DuPonts and the Fords and the Rockefellers and the Pews, raised more than 16 million members of the organized labor movement. We can't compete with their billions. They raised $5 million in one dinner for Ike a month ago. But we can raise a few thousand dollars. And what we've got to tell a worker, $1 for Coke is the best investment that you can make. Look on the SUB fight. There were $20 million that we won at the bargaining table, and the reactionaries in Columbus took it away, until you did something about it in 1958. And we can do something now. I say 1960 is a year of decision, and the decision is in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands, because what America does in responding to the call to greatness, in responding to the call of mobilizing this great material wealth, and then drawing deeply out of our democratic heritage, out of our belief in the worth and the dignity of the human being, give that power and that wealth a sense of moral direction and moral purpose by gearing it to the needs of all the people. This, and nothing less than this, is what is at stake in 1960. And I say to you, go back home. Go back home, each of you, as missionaries, to carry the gospel of democratic citizenship. Talk to your fellow workers in the plants. Tell them what's at stake in 1960. Get their dollars to help finance this campaign to get our message out. Get them to register in your neighborhoods. And I say if we do that, 1960 can be the year in which America has thrown off the corruption of complacency and stagnation, and America can respond to the challenge to greatness in terms of the struggle to win the peace with the same courage, the same dedication, the same total effort in winning the peace as we responded to the challenge of war. It can be done. I have unlimited faith in the capacity of free men to move mountains when they are mobilized in common dedication. And this we must achieve in America. Go to work. Work like you have never worked before, because America cannot afford 8 more years of drift and stagnation, of complacency and confusion. We need, as Franklin Roosevelt said in 1932, he said, if elected to the high office of presidency, my first official act will be to move the seat of government from Wall Street back to Washington. Let's do that again in 1960. Thank you.
Just making an academic decision, they don't qualify. And this was true. So we've got to back down and begin to give them equal educational opportunities.
You mentioned down there a federal FEP law. How soon would you advocate passage of such a law?
Oh, we've been advocating for years. We think that at the moment, the most important thing is to get the right to vote, because that's fundamental. And getting the right to vote and getting the effective implementation of the Supreme Court decision are two very important matters. But on the question of equal job opportunities, obviously, the day must come when the right to earn a living is available to every American based upon his capabilities as an individual. And the right to earn a living should not be excluded based upon racial or religious grounds.
I noticed the Committee on Racial Equality has called for a boycott of Woolworth and other variety store chains. Do you think this is a...
I am for doing everything that we can do by peaceful and legal means to dramatize and to expose discrimination in every one of its ugly forms. And this is just another way of doing that. If I were a college student, I would be actively organizing these groups all over America, and I think it's to the credit of our young people in our schools that they are responding in the North to the struggle of their Negro brothers and sisters in the South in this period. This is a great tribute to the young people of America. I wish the adults could demonstrate as much will to fight on other fronts. Yeah.
Well, don't you see anything in the New South, actually, among the older people, changing?
Oh, I think there's great hope in the South. I think, personally, that if you could leave the South to its own good judgment and get bigotry out of politics and get the professionals who exploit and make a career out of bigotry and hate, if you could get them out of this, I think there's enough good common sense and a sense of what's right and wrong that the South would find its way out of this difficulty quite quickly. With difficulty, obviously, this is a difficult problem, but they would make the transition. But there's a small minority of the hate mongers and the professional bigots who were down there building and creating and exploiting this hatred. And I think if they could be gotten out of the way, you could make progress quite fast. There's nothing basically wrong with the people in the South. We have them in our union, and they're just like other people. But when the professionals are in there exploiting this and making a career out of it, then it's harder to get people who want to do the right thing to do the right thing. This is, I think, the source of our great difficulty in the South.
Public transportation segregation has been accepted on interstate and in various cities like Houston, Texas, and some of the others,
well,
without any difficulty.
It's
really
amazing how this problem can be solved when there's goodwill and when people sit down and, one of the cities, was it San Antonio, Texas, where they had a big community meeting and they said, look, why do we have to have these demonstrations of the lunch counters? Why don't we sit down and work? They worked it out. I mean, when there's enough goodwill and common sense, this problem can be worked out. But it's when the bigots take over and when common sense and goodwill gets pushed aside that this is when you have trouble. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. Fine, I got to get out and say hello to the IUE boys, and I got to be on my way to Peoria.
Can I get to, it's difficult for us to do this with everyone else here. We'll just ask you a couple of questions.
I guess you
answer them and we'll get out of here.
All right.
See, you're hiding back there.
Why don't you sit over there?
All right, I will.
Well,
okay. I have a microphone problem.
Oh, I see.
So, I'll pull a chair over here.
We'll
turn
it half and half.
Okay.
Do you
want to
move this here?
Well,
this
that'll be all right.
Okay. I got to look, kind of look at you and
that's
watch
good.
The camera. This way, I got to turn too much.
Yeah.
Too abrupt.
Let's see. I'd like Mr. Ritter, those questions regarding the politics.
You mean about who we're for?
Yes, and that type of thing. Like, it's, even though you're saying we're neutral, you're saying no. I'd still like to. I'd like to have those answers.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Ruther, in our last question, we referred to the election. The GOP picture seems pretty well drawn at this time with regard to the presidential nominee. We'd like to know what you think the Democratic nominee will be, who he will be, and what will be the strategy involved.
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, and it seems to me that the candidate that the Democrats will put forward is a decision and a responsibility which the delegates in the Democratic Convention will need to make. I'm going to be strictly neutral, and the AFL-CIO has taken a position of neutrality. We're going to try to get the people of this country registered so that they can carry out their citizenship responsibilities, and we're going to talk about the issues, about the need for education and housing and medical care for our older people, and the other things that need to be done to get America on the move so that we can have full employment and full production in peacetime. And the question of who the candidates will be, this is a decision which the two conventions will need to make.
How about next Tuesday in Wisconsin? Do you feel the results of that primary will have a definite effect on the Democratic nominee at the convention in general?
Well, both of the people who are engaged in the Democratic contest in Wisconsin obviously feel that it has some significance or they wouldn't be up there.
In the area of civil rights, do you believe the minority groups are making progress toward their goals?
Well, I think we're making progress on the question of civil rights, but I think we're making too little progress and too slowly. I think that this is a really basic moral question that transcends politics. I think that if America is to provide leadership to the forces of freedom in our struggle against the forces of communist tyranny, that we've got to get our moral credentials in proper order by bridging the moral gap between what American democracy promises
and what it practices in the field of civil rights. And I feel that this is a very important matter because we just can't go on denying people their rights and their opportunities as American citizens just because the good Lord made them dark.
Do you think one avenue of success is the sit-in demonstrations that are going on currently?
Well, I'm very encouraged by the fact that students in the North, in the universities, are demonstrating their support and their solidarity behind their Negro brothers and sisters in the Southern universities. And I think that this is a very encouraging thing to see that young America is standing up on the moral side of this basic issue.
Good. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
That's all right. You can't do anything about it.